Welcome to Uncovered. It's Wednesday. I'm Anthony Davis. He's Ron Filipkowski. And together we uncover the MAGA propaganda. And there is so much of it. I mean, it is literally like America is now split into two kind of parallel existences. And I just want to say, Ron, that I have noticed more and more that the Republicans and the MAGA Republicans are talking about what's happening to Donald Trump as a, you know, kangaroo court and Biden. They're really doubling down on that. And if you live in that world, you have a completely different experience of America from reality. And we like to only try to operate in reality. So welcome to reality. Wednesday's reality. A couple of very interesting stories have broken. One about Georgia. Let's start with that, Ron. Just tell us what's happened at the Georgia Court of Appeals.
Yeah, well, they've taken up the big hearing that they had on whether Fani Willis was going to be disqualified for her relationship with the special prosecutor that she hired to handle the Trump case. Obviously, we had a lot of drama, big hearing about that. We thought that that was behind us, but they have agreed to take the appeal. So what does this mean? Well, the judge, McAfee there, he's already ruled that pretrial motions and pretrial discovery will continue whether they take the case or not, but the appellate court could step in and stay all of that if they choose. What this means is very unlikely now that this case is going to go to trial before the election. We just can't bank on this. And, you know, I posted today online, I feel like, you know, you can't just chalk this up to, you know, right-wing Georgia courts or anything like that. This is Fani Willis bears responsibility here. She had this enormous, historically important case dumped into her lap, and she obviously put some other things ahead of that.
So you're talking about her relationship with the prosecutor that she hired, and she claimed that she hadn't. It's a bit like Bill Clinton. I never had sexual relations with that woman. You know, a similar denial came out front. Then there was an investigation. I mean, it's not good for democracy when somebody says, no, it didn't happen. And then it is discovered that they did. Because that just plays right into the MAGA Republicans' hands. And they've been abusing it, haven't they?
Yeah. And look, we know everything that they did was disgusting. There was so much racism involved. I'm going to acknowledge all of that. But at the same time, an elected DA in a huge prosecutor's office prosecuting the case of a lifetime just couldn't put herself in that position and put the country in that position. We were counting on her to do her job in a dot every I, cross every T, and do it perfectly. And she fell well short of that. And the result is that this case is definitely not going to be tried before the election.
And then the other news that broke, I think, early yesterday was, as I've predicted, because remember, I'm the non-lawyer in this family, right? You know, of course, we have Ben and we have Michael Popok and yourself and Karen, you know, all very experienced
lawyers.
And I'm the lay journalist. And I'm like, I don't think any of these cases are going to stick. And you guys are like, yes, they are. It's the law. And I'm like, I think that, you know, Trump is so slippery that everything is going to slide off him. Well, we've just discovered that Eileen Cannon in Florida with the classified documents case, which is a national security case, an espionage case, very, very serious, has kicked it into the long grass. Just explain what happens there.
I mean, this was probably the least surprising of all of the developments because she left the original trial date up, which was less than 2 weeks. Of course, that was never going to happen because Trump is in the middle of his New York trial. Plus, his immunity appeal is up in front of the Supreme Court, which also has to be decided first. So, but, you know, what she could have done, should have done, is resolve a lot of the pretrial issues that she's left hanging around, which she then used as her excuse to not set a new trial date. She could have set a new trial date in July, August, because we are expecting the Supreme Court to issue their ruling, of course, before their term ends in June. So we're certainly expecting a June decision by the Supreme Court. We were hoping to get May, but it has to at least be June at the latest. And we could have a trial on that case in July, August, if she was doing her job, but she didn't do her job on other pretrial matters. So clearly that case will also definitely not be tried before the election. So there we are with that.
So in the meantime, you know, Jack Smith is like hanging on desperately. We've got Fawny Willis, who's, you know, made a mess of it. Who's left? I mean, it could turn out a little bit like Al Capone being done on tax, that really this is going to be the thing maybe that prevents Donald Trump from continuing his kind of criminal mastermind plans.
So here's where I'm going to stay in opposition to the law firm of Anthony Davis and say that I still believe that one of these is going to go to trial, one of these federal cases, and that is the D.C., you know, January 6th case with Judge Chutkan.
Chutkan, yeah.
Unlike Cannon, she has taken care diligently of all the pretrial matters and really has this case ready to go. She's just simply waiting on the U.S. Supreme Court to issue their immunity decision. Now, they could issue some kind of bizarre decision and make that case extremely difficult to try, but that's okay. We just want a trial. So I think that what is going to happen there is once the Supreme Court issues their decision, which probably, you know, beginning of June, she will immediately put the case on the next trial docket, July, August, and that case will go. That's what I'm hoping. That is also, as far as politically, I think the documents case is the easiest to prove. But as far as the most devastating politically goes, it's the January 6th case, because all of the witnesses involved in that were former members of his administration, including his former chief of staff, his former vice president. That trial, I don't believe he can win the election if we have that trial, because I think the evidence in that case is going to be so devastating.
I mean, I don't believe he can win the election full stop, but I recognize that you can't allow something like an uprising, a coup against your own country, to just go unchallenged and for him not to be criminalized over that. Because a lot of us were saying, well, he should have been criminalized over that the next day. You know, January the 7th should have been the day that Trump gets led away in handcuffs. In most other civilized countries where the judicial system is not, you know, for profit, it seems that that probably would have happened. But here, it's a different story.
And that's why, you know, at the end of the day, if none of these cases do get tried, the blame goes to Merrick Garland. I mean, there's no two ways around it. I defended him for 2 years, but, I haven't defended him for the last year. He dithered. He delayed too long. The findings of the January 6th committee, the report, shamed him into action. Jack Smith should have been appointed a long time before that. I mean, I'll give him props for appointing Jack Smith, and I'll say that everything Jack Smith has done has been as close to perfect as you can get, and I support everything he's done. The problem is that Merrick Garland did not give him enough time to get it done before the election, which could result in, if Trump wins, of course, he'll then have immunity from prosecution, and Merrick Garland will really at that point have to be considered one of the worst attorney generals in history.
This is despite the fact that Trump claims that, you know, Garland is the enemy and he's working for Biden. And, you know, the whole parallel narrative puts Garland as the enemy. Whereas for those of us who are sitting on the right side of history, we're like, Garland has been dragging his heels. But there's somebody else that people forget and don't really talk about who also has delayed all of this in association with Garland. And that's Christopher Wray, the FBI director. And there was a story last week about him that where it basically said he suggested to Garland that it would not be a good idea to prosecute a former president.
Sure. Well, let's not forget, Wray is a Republican. Wray is appointed by Trump. I mean, for all that the Republicans want to badmouth him, I don't think he's on our side in any way. I don't think he's with the Democrats. I think he's kind of doing his job. So sure, you know, he was, they're institutionalists, these guys. I am too. Look, I understand that, you know, they're traditionalists. They're conservative, old school conservative small C's, where they believe in precedent institutions, and they don't want to turn the country upside down. And I understand that. But, this was an extraordinary situation, and they just had to, but they didn't. They failed.
And ironically, Donald Trump refers to these people as the deep state. I mean, you know, the FBI director is very much a part of the deep state, as Trump claims, which, you know, translated is merely the federal government, which is supposed to keep us safe.
Yeah. And, you know, dovetailing into that is Judge Mershon. You know, I know we're going to that at some point here, but Judge Mershon, you know, he's bent over. He's made so many rulings in favor of Trump in this trial. So many. And he scolded the prosecutor yesterday on several things, considered even granting a mistrial for a few minutes. I mean, the idea that Mershon has bent over backwards in favor of the state is absolutely not true. But you will never hear Trump or any Republican say Mershon got something right. Mershon did a good job on that ruling. They will never, ever say that, even though that is, he's made many rulings in their favor.
So Donald Trump has been sitting in an excruciating fashion, having to listen to Stormy Daniels' testimony yesterday. It's been very interesting. I just want to play, though, the clip of Trump outside of the court, where he basically explained what this case was about and almost confesses, doesn't he, regarding the payment to the lawyers and that payment then going to Stormy Daniels. Here it is.
Morning America, they said, we heard that expense payments to lawyers are legal expenses. You pay a lawyer expense payments. We didn't put it down as construction costs, the purchase of sheetrock, the electrical cost. The legal expense that we paid was put down as legal expense. There's nothing else you could say. You don't have to put down anything, I guess. But we put down legal expense was legal expense. Is that a correct statement, Mr. Attorney? And everyone's saying, oh, gee, that's the fraud. That's what they're trying to get us on, the fact that we call a legal expense a legal expense. They marked it down in the books. The check was signed.
If we were playing buzzword bingo, I think legal expense would have been the phrase that got us the most points. I mean, the best part about that clip is the attorney, of course, just like, please shut up.
Right. He absolutely does not want him saying any of that. And you can see when Trump turns to him in these moments, as he did on the gag when he made his incorrect statement on the gag order.
Yeah.
He went to the attorney and got the attorney in a little bit of hot water with the judge by getting him to nod. All he did was briefly nod. This time, you know, you could just see him like, please don't go to me. Please don't ask me to comment on your insanity. So, I mean, the argument saying, well, I put it down on the ledger as a legal expense, so therefore that's it. It clearly wasn't money going to Stormy Daniels. It was a legal expense. Well, we've got so much testimony in this trial that goes against all of that, including the testimony of his own comptroller, of his own CFO, his CFO's own contemporaneous handwritten notes at the time disprove what Trump is saying. I mean, so it's just preposterous, but this is all for the consumption of his MAGA cult, what he's saying. You know, it's not for a court. This is all just nonsense that he's putting out for his fans, because the trial's not televised. So they're pumping out this alternative reality to their cultists of what they're saying is really happening here, but what they're saying is not what's actually happening.
And that behavior is textbook malignant narcissist to change the narrative. So we have talked about this a little bit before, but just from a mental health perspective, because you can see this is the rantings of a madman. I mean, we're not talking about an ordinary, you know, regular, sane person. This is somebody who is really very mentally compromised. And the way that he does it and the way that he rewrites what's gone in the court, as you say, so it goes onto Fox and onto Newsmax, and then they repeat it, and then they're like, we can't believe, it's terrible, it's a disgrace. And actually, as you said a few moments ago, if you were in the courtroom, you'd know that the judge has actually been very, very fair.
Yeah. And the repetition, what you just said, is very much part of the whole playbook, you know, the propaganda playbook, which is continuing to repeat the same things over and over. His social media account, as I follow it every day, It's the same verbiage, the same themes, the same posts over and over. Even in that clip, he's repeating the phrases over and over and over. It's just like Crooked Hillary, Sleepy Joe. This is part of what he does. He believes, just like Joseph Goebbels said, that if you just repeat the lie so many times over and over again, people will eventually come to believe it. And it's true. It does work. People do come to believe the lie that
he's been doing it for
over
years.
And over again.
It's been almost a decade of this repetition, and it has become part of the American vernacular, tragically. I want to go back to that that visual that, for those listening on the audio podcast, this is an image. Is this from the ledger, or what is this, a receipt? Just explain what we're looking at here.
This was introduced by his comptroller, who pays his bills. And you know, you can see here a wire, $130,000, you see in the middle, to Keith Davidson. Who is Keith Davidson? Stormy Daniels' attorney. So you got, this is supposed to be what Trump says is his legal fee. You can see here, it was wire transferred, $130,000 to Stormy's lawyer.
But this is the smoking gun, isn't it, Ron?
It is. And you see Alan Weisselberg, who's his CFO's, handwritten notes at the bottom. Grossed up to 360, grossed up. This was the scheme that Alan Weisselberg, his CFO, devised so that Cohen would not have to pay the taxes on, because see, they're paying him and they're calling it a legal fee. So if they just reimbursed him the 130 as legal fee, then, you know, a big chunk of that he's going to have to pay out of his pocket taxes on this, because this is being shown as income, not reimbursement. So grossed up means that Weisselberg devised a scheme to give Cohen extra money. Okay, extra money
to pay the tax.
Cover the taxes.
I mean, it's a joke.
And then break the payments into monthly installments. It's all right there in writing. They're showing you in writing at the time what the scheme was. So for Trump to then walk outside and say it was all legal expenses, it's just contradicted by the documents.
Hence the face on his attorney when he turned to him for him to agree. And the attorney was like, don't look at me. I want to play the clip of the gag where he does the same thing about the gag order, because it's just as funny and also just as frightening, really. And this is, of course, 9 times, or was it 10 times now? He has basically...
He's up to 10.
Oh, it's up to 10. Oh, ding, ding. It's up to 10. Let's take a look at
plus 9 in the Engeron civil fraud case. So really, we're up to 19.
Here he is trying to wriggle out of it for his fans.
And it's a disgrace. And then you have the other thing that maybe is even more disgraceful is the gag order, where I can't basically, I have to watch every word I tell you people. You ask me a question, a simple question, I'd like to give it, but I can't talk about it. Because this judge has given me a gag order and said you'll go to jail if you violate it. And frankly, you know what? Our Constitution is much more important than jail. It's not even close. I'll do that sacrifice any day. But what's happening here is a disgrace, and the appellate courts ought to get involved.
Sorry, what, a gag order? What's a gag order? Is that a Queens reference?
What I've noticed is now that he's been up in New York a lot, because of this trial, his New York accent's coming back,
right?
Much thicker. You hear it a lot when he's been up there for a few days. But what he just, I mean, what he said there is, of course, a lie. You know, he's not willing to go. He's not willing to go to jail. It's the false bravado is also a part of his fake persona, mm-hmm. which is this, I'm this macho tough guy. I'm going to stand up to the man. I'm going to fight back. Well, he doesn't. When he knows that he's pushed things as far as he can and they're not going to tolerate it anymore, which is rare, but it does happen on occasion. That's when he stops. And we saw yesterday, he made a post. Didn't mention Stormy Daniels by name, but he made a post just about referencing that he just found out who the next witness was, and this is all unfair. He was referencing Stormy Daniels. He deleted that post 15 minutes later. So that shows, and by the way, he said nothing about Cohen, nothing about Daniels, nothing about the judge's daughter for at least a week now. not one word. So the idea that he's this tough, brave guy who's going to stand up to the judge and fight back, and he's willing to go to jail to fight for his rights. Well, he could do that in 2 seconds. He can post something about Stormy Daniels or Michael Cohen, but he won't, because he knows that he's taken it as far as he can take it. If he violates this time, it will not be intentional. It will be because of negligence. It will be because he posts an article or a clip that has something in it that trashes those people. If he violates, that's how he'll do it.
Let's just talk about this notion that he may go to jail over this, because, I mean, tragically, this plays right into the hands, again, of MAGA Republicans and their narrative that this is the deep state trying to, prevent the opposition from, and then they compare it to, do you remember when he said that line, what they're doing to me is Navalny, like left out like three words in that sentence. This is why it's such a hard decision for the judge, right? Because it the way it looks, the optics of this versus what is necessary to actually, allow justice to be done and to stop him from breaking these gag orders. And then we had Eric Adams, the mayor in New York today, kind of saying, oh, we've got, Rikers Island is all ready to receive him. And, that was very kind of theatrical. The serious side of this, though, is that, he does need to go to jail for 20 minutes, 2 days, who knows? It's symbolic, but it also could be detrimental.
And I think that's why Mershon has given him enough rope to hang himself, warned him. And I think that's important. I think that if you're going to put a former president of the United States in jail for violating a gag order for contempt, you have to show the American people, the public, that you have done everything that you possibly could to avoid doing that. But he basically put himself in jail. I didn't put you in jail. You put yourself in jail. And that's basically what his last warning was. Yeah. See, the first time he just put it out in writing. Okay. This time he did more than that. He looked directly at Trump and he said, look, I'm just telling you right now, you're giving me no choice. I'm going to be forced to put you in jail. But at the same time, he also said he understands the magnitude of that decision. Meanwhile, Trump has his campaign spokespeople out there on TV, Haba and Caroline Leavitt, saying there's going to be, riots in the streets if Mershon does that.
Well, they're saying we want riots in the streets. That's what they're projecting, aren't they?
That's right.
They're saying come and riot in the street if this happens, in the same way that Trump this week had to plead for people to come and support him because no one was showing up to even protest outside the courtroom. And he pretended that it was because there was barricades and you couldn't get within five blocks of this court. And actually, it was because nobody really cares.
I think if there's one thing that these aggressive J6 prosecutions of the rioters has done, it's made all of them wise up.
Yes.
No, I think none of these guys are willing to go to jail anymore for Trump. Okay. So I don't believe there will be riots. There might be some protests. There's going to be a lot of yelling and screaming, but there's not going to be any, violence in the streets, because they understand that DOJ is not playing around with them anymore.
The other thing that really strikes me about this story is that this really confirms to me that the whole reason that Donald Trump is running for president again, despite knowing that he's probably going to lose, is so that he can get out of these court cases and this legal hot water that he's in. Because just imagine if they were trying to, accuse him of these same crimes, but he wasn't running for president. He would have been thrown in jail a few days ago for the over like gag order number seven. But
exactly,
it's the fact that he has chosen to run for president and has bullied his way to be the presidential candidate, and everyone's now had to get behind him, that is the reason why this is such a difficult case to play out for the judiciary at all levels.
And he knew that full well.
Yeah.
And that's a huge reason why he's running. Of course, that is the reason why he's running. There's no domestic policy agenda. I mean, he's put out policy stuff and we've talked about that, but he doesn't care about any of those things. These aren't Donald Trump ideas. These aren't things that Trump badly wants to implement. These are just things that his campaign people have cooked up for him so he can have some policy things to talk about. But really, yes, he only cares about running for president to, number one, be president, and number two, get the immunity that will keep him out of jail, squash all these prosecutions. Of course, the first thing he's going to do is pardon himself and fire Jack Smith and gut the FBI and gut DOJ. And it's going to be an absolute nightmare scenario. And hopefully there's enough Americans with half a brain who can see that reality in front of them and don't want that.
Well, it's for us and people like us to keep calling it out, because, you know, again, the mainstream media have dropped the ball on this. You know, they could do a whole lot more in recognizing Donald Trump's motive instead of just reporting on what's happening. Say why he is in this situation. I just want to show a clip from the far right news channel. We can see Alina Haber just fighting his corner. Here she is.
But he did, and he recognized it and then threatened to put him in jail for speaking. He didn't even speak, frankly, Sean. He reposted things that other people said, and that in itself he called contempt. We are looking at a serious dual system of justice. We are in a...
It's a dual reality, Ron. That's what it is. And that's why I wanted to show that clip, because what is being reported for the people who watch Fox and Newsmax and OAN and all the others is something so detached from what's really happening. And, you know, the judiciary is trying to be serious and trying to make use of the protocols of the law. And the way Donald Trump presents it in his speeches outside and then is repeated by people like Alina Haber on Fox, it is to double down on the kangaroo court aspect of this.
And that's really why I pointed out that the fact that he's paying he has to have a full-time legal spokesperson.
Yes.
Not even in the courtroom anymore, you know, working as his attorney. He has other people doing that. She's sitting in the courtroom observing with him. And she's the last campaign finance report. My recollection is she has been paid over $3 million out of campaign funds. So she's continuing to get paid an astronomical amount of money, not even to be in courtrooms anymore, but to serve as his legal spokesperson, to put out the counter narrative, to put out the nonsense. But think about that. Think about how many field offices, how many get out the vote drives you can use. You can spend that money on. Joe Biden isn't spending millions of dollars on a legal spokesperson, okay? And this is not something that's necessary, but he obviously feels it's necessary because he has to put out propaganda to counter the news, the real news. He has to put out his own fake version.
And meanwhile, Project 2025, as we've talked about often, the Heritage Foundation and their plan to reshape the U.S. government in Donald Trump's image, announced this week that they're considering banning pornography if Donald Trump was to win. You know, and I think that they're using him because they think that they can win with him because he plays the victim and then he'll be the martyr. And so they're kind of using him to then bring their agenda about, which is far more extreme than even Donald Trump cares for. And that will become the, you know, the law of the land.
And this is the point. Does Donald Trump care about banning pornography?
He's the wrong person.
Obviously not. I mean, he could care less, right?
He'll use a VPN. That's what will happen.
You know, this is not something that Donald Trump cares about. He doesn't care about any of this policy stuff.
Or even abortion, Ron. Even abortion.
But as you said, doesn't care about abortion either. Yeah. But as you said, it's all the people in his camp, in his orbit, that want to do all these crazy things. And he's not going to stop them if he gets in there.
Well, because his ego, his narcissism prevents him from really caring about policy. He's like, yeah, fine, whatever, just get me elected. And that's right. That's really the most dangerous part of this.
Keep is the base
some,
happy.
Correct. Yep. And there's some very powerful, wealthy, manipulative people who know how to, you know, make this stuff work. And Trump doesn't, but once he's in, then, you know, it's all hands to the pump. Let's talk quickly about Stormy Daniels' testimony. Of course, I mentioned at the top she's been giving testimony. The judge didn't really want to hear the kind of sexy details, did he?
No. Yeah, no, not. In fact, he was a little upset. I mean, he was probably more than a little upset at the level of detail she went into. He scolded her, had her attorney talk to her, scolded the prosecutors. And this was the part that he almost granted the mistrial on, because Stormy did, look, I've tried a million cases in state criminal court, and Stormy did what a lot of witnesses do that are like her, that are very opinionated, have a lot to say, they don't really follow the rules. And so
she talked very quickly. They had to keep slowing her down.
She speaks fast, so you can't stop her. You know, it's like she would make editorial comments is what she would do. Right. She would be asked a question. She would answer the question directly and then add her opinion to it. Like she would go, she would talk about, you know, well, what happened next? Well, I went to the bathroom and then I saw a toiletry bag on the counter, and I looked in there and I saw Old Spice cologne, and I saw what else did she say? Pert Plus shampoo. She's like, and then he had gold plated tweezers, and she said, I thought that was very weird. So that's an example. Like all she's asked was, you know, did you go to the bathroom? And she added in all that extra stuff.
Yeah.
And that's the part that, like, she kept doing that the judge got very upset with her about. So
I was listening to NPR this morning as I was taking my kids to school, and they were reporting on it. You know, I don't have much respect for that organization anymore. You know, the way they're covering stuff is, again, very much like both sides in it. And they were basically saying that Stormy Daniels was like contradicting stuff that she said before, and that her story was all over the place. I mean, is that fair, considering that, you know, she's very much the victim in this situation? You know, she went to meet him, hopefully to talk about some opportunities. Yes, you could say it's naive that she went up to his hotel room because he wasn't ready. And, you know, he was apparently wearing a robe, a Hugh Hefner style, which she pointed out. And then she says, go put some clothes on. And he did. He went, disappeared. And then when she went to the bathroom and came back, suddenly he's in his boxer shorts and a T-shirt, reclining on the bed, kind of waiting for her. And she said, my goodness, like, how did I misread this situation? She didn't want to have sexual relations with him. She found him utterly repulsive. But as, you know, a lot of women will know that when you have rich, powerful men effectively pressuring you and you want to get a step up in life, then you sometimes do things that you really, you know, wouldn't want to do or may regret. And that's how she described it in this instance.
Yeah, I mean, look, There's a lot to say here. If this case relied on Stormy Daniels' credibility and Michael Cohen's credibility, and that was the case, you wouldn't have a case. It wouldn't be brought. That's not the issue. Is that thankfully it doesn't have to rely on them, because a lot of what they're testifying to is backed up by other witnesses and documents and wire transfers and all of this. So,
and this isn't a sexual assault case. I mean, this isn't an E. Jean Carroll style case. This is about a ledger, and it's about election interference, which of course we should remind people that that's what this is. Not just a hush money case. It's an election interference case.
Yeah. But we haven't really even gotten to a lot of that part of it.
Yeah.
So the point is that a lot of the reasons, there's two reasons why both of them have credibility problems, is that both of them are trying to maintain their reputations such as they are. And so both have a tendency to sugarcoat the bad things that they did, even today, and minimize some of the, now they've both come clean on some things. But also at the same time, I mean, I'll give you an example. She would say, like, well, I really didn't sell my story for the money. I just wanted it to be out there in the public because I was being threatened. And my lawyer told me that if it was made public, the threats would be less dangerous. Look, she was doing it for the money. This is my point. You need to just come clean and say, yeah, you know what? I wanted the money. I have a kid. I wanted to help the kid. It was a lot of money to me. Sure, I took the money. Instead, she tries to come up with other reasons why she sold the story when it's all BS. She sold the story for money. And Cohen does the same kind of stuff. And so if you rely on just these two people, you're not going to have a case. But you know what? The government always has these problems in criminal cases. the drug trafficker, you're not going to bust a major drug trafficker with an undercover cop. You're going to have to get to him with informants, which means other drug dealers have to set him up. So when you're putting other drug dealers on the witness stand, you know that their credibility is not very good because you've made deals with them. So you have to have other evidence. And that's the point. They can beat up on Stormy. They can beat up on Michael all they want. And they're going to do it in the media and all that. But the bottom line is the prosecutors would not have brought this prosecution to trial if they had to rely on these two. And they're not relying on these two.
I just wanted to say in their defense that I think anybody who's been put through those types of things and having to, you know, be in Donald Trump's orbit probably spend an awful lot of time trying to go over it and analyze it in their minds. And yeah, of course, everybody has their price, Ron, I think is what I'm trying to say.
But that's
right. That doesn't mean that you don't struggle with the decisions that you made and have to feel the need to justify them in court or even just to your friends and family. Okay, we have to take a quick break. We're going to come back and talk more about not just this case, but the kind of greater ramifications. That's next here on Uncovered. Do you remember cereal being one of the best parts of being a kid? Well, as I got older, I had to watch for sugar and empty carbs. Well, Magic Spoon has the amazing flavors you love, but high protein and less sugar. You can get the variety pack, 4 flavors, cocoa, fruity, frosted, and peanut butter. This pack has no grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, and 4 to 5 grams of net carbs. And only 140 calories per serving. It's high protein, has no grams of sugar, keto-friendly, gluten-free, grain-free, and soy-free. Go to magicspoon.com/uncovered to grab a variety pack and try it today. And be sure to use the promo code UNCOVERED at checkout to save $5 off your order. And Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. Remember, start your day off right with a delicious bowl of high-protein cereal at magicspoon.com/uncovered and use code UNCOVERED to save $5 off. Thank you, Magic Spoon, for sponsoring this episode. Have you ever wished you had a whiter and brighter smile? Well, before you visit a dentist, you should know that whitening treatments there can be expensive, and it's not just the price. You also have to book the appointment and schedule time away from work or family to sit in a dentist's office and undergo the procedure. It's a hassle. Fortunately, now you can try Smile Actives at home or anywhere, anytime. Smile Actives offers a safe and affordable alternative to those expensive whitening procedures. 97% of Smile Actives users in a clinical trial reported up to 6 shades whiter on average, all within 30 days. Simply add Smile Actives Pro Whitening Gel to your regular toothpaste. It's been formulated with PolyClean technology to boost stain removal and deliver active whitening ingredients into teeth's grooves and crannies to get better whitening. Smile Actives makes a teeth whitening gel that can simply be added to your toothbrush every time you brush your teeth. No change in your routine, no extra time, no more messy strips, trays, or lights. People will start commenting on your whiter, brighter smile in just days. Visit smileactives.com/uncovered today to receive a special buy one, get one free offer with auto delivery plus free shipping and handling. That's smileactives.com/uncovered. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details. And links to our sponsors can be found in the description below. Ron, just talking about the kind of wider effect of Donald Trump being in court, let's talk about the Indiana primary, because the results, are they in or are these just predictions? It's very interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, this is in. This is 99%. Really, really surprising, because Nikki Haley's now been out of this race for 2 months. Her name's still on the ballot, but she's been out. She's not campaigning. And what these results continue to show, and this was not an open primary. It's not totally closed. It's considered one of these partially open primaries where, in theory, somebody else can vote in a Republican primary, but they have to switch their registration prior to the vote, which very few Democrats are ever going to do that. Why would you at this point? simply to you're gonna change your party registration to Republican just to vote for a candidate who's no longer in the race. No, that's really not happening anymore. So that excuse is kind of gone. And this result was consistent with the last primaries, which were closed. So what we're seeing is a consistent 20 to 25% of Republicans who are refusing to color in the bubble next to Donald Trump's name. And that is a major, major development. That's over, well over 100,000 people in the state of Indiana, which is ruby red, which is as red as you can get. Mike Pence's home state. So, and don't think that Trump's treatment of Mike Pence had nothing to do with any of this stuff, because it does. So this is huge, and this is inconsistent with the polls, and it's inconsistent with Trump claims he has a 96% approval rating among Republicans, all fabricated. The question is, what are these people going to do in November? Are they going to come home? As we've said, I think some of them will, but many of them will not. And many of them will either do what I did in 16 and color in none of the above, or go third party or write in somebody like Ronald Reagan or something like that. I think that's what, isn't that what Mike Pence said he was going to do, write in Ronald Reagan?
Yeah.
So that's what a lot of these people are going to do. And Trump needs every one of these people. He cannot lose his Republican base in this election. So that's why I say the polls are all wrong. Disregard the polls. They're consistently wrong. And the results consistently, the voting results are not matching the polls in state after state after state.
And it's probably a good time to mention Jeff Duncan, of course, who has basically come out and said that he will vote for a decent person that he disagrees with on policy over a criminal defendant without a moral compass. Just explain that decision, and if you think that there'll be other lawmakers who will do a similar thing.
This is important for a number of reasons. One, this is Georgia. Georgia is a critical state. Trump cannot win if he loses Georgia. That's the bottom line. The bottom line is there's no path. If Trump loses Georgia, there's no path to victory for him. So Georgia is an absolutely critical state that they're banking on, that they're counting on winning. And so what you have is the Republican leadership of the state, which is Brian Kemp, Jeff Duncan, Brad Raffensperger, are enemies of Trump. Not one of them has endorsed Trump. Not one. In fact, Brian Kemp's wife, the first lady of Georgia, has said she will not vote for Trump under any circumstances. Now you have the Kemp, who was Kemp's lieutenant governor, Jeff Duncan, saying he's going to actually go further than that. He's going to vote for Biden. And this was a very popular lieutenant governor, a former professional baseball player, not a moderate. He is a conservative Republican standing up and saying basically what Adam Kinzinger and Liz Cheney are saying. We need more of this. I mean, he went further than Pence, but I'll take what we got from Pence. The big question here, so what we know is the old guard Republican establishment in Georgia is not backing Trump. What will Brian Kemp do? Because Brian Kemp wants to be president and he wants to run in 2028. Is he really going to go out on a limb and say what Jeff Duncan just said? Probably not. But if we get something like a Pence statement out of him, look, I'm not going to vote for Trump, I'm going to write in Ronald Reagan, that is huge. That means the entire Republican leadership of the state of Georgia is opposing Trump, and that would be huge.
And, you know, people wonder why the polls struggle or pollsters struggle so much to kind of encapsulate what's happening in America. It's because there are so many variables. And, you know, I think it would be remiss of us not to mention the amount of voter suppression that is going on. And I'm hearing more and more about this in various Republican states where they're going out of their way to prevent people from voting.
Sure. Well, and then they're doing that for themselves. You know, they're not, I don't think in some cases they're doing it for Trump. Sure. But they're also doing it for themselves, for the state rep races, for the school board races. You know, they want to win those too. So sure. But I think up to this point, we're just going to have to fight through those things. And we saw in the midterms, we did fight through those things. We had great turnout in the midterms, despite all of that stuff, because people are motivated to defeat these people.
And RFK Jr. as well has been hitting the headlines in the last 24 hours in a big way. He came out with one of the weirdest statements that kind of went viral, didn't it? He says that there is a dead worm in his brain. He said the doctor believed that the abnormality seen on his scans was caused by a worm that got into my brain and ate a portion of it and then died. This is something that came out in a deposition. Just explain this, because I don't know. I mean, I've heard of an earworm, but this is ridiculous.
Yeah, this is just a wild, wild story. What he said, apparently in a 2012 deposition, he made this statement. And this was because he's had a few different minor strokes, I believe. So he was trying to explain what was wrong with him.
Medically, obviously.
Physically. Yeah, yeah, he was saying that this was the cause of his medical problems, the reason why he was having these strokes. But at the same time, you know, a lot of people are mystified as to what happened to Robert F. Kennedy, because let's rewind. He was, back in the 80s and 90s, a fairly well-respected environmental lawyer, consumer advocate type lawyer. He was very liberal, you know, and very progressive. And then he kind of like fell off and kind of disappeared in the 2000s in the millennial. And then he pops back into the public consciousness as this conspiracy theorist during COVID, spouting all this crazy stuff. And that's when he became sort of a hero among the MAGA people. Among the MAGA people that, I draw this distinction, that group of MAGA voters who never voted before 2016, the people who never voted, never participated in politics, who Donald Trump brought into the Republican Party, that is the group of people that RFK appealed to during COVID, which is why he's also a problem for Donald Trump, because the new people that he brought in who have no loyalty whatsoever to the Republican Party, many of them also like RFK. And so stories like this tend not to bother those people very much, you know, brain worms, but definitely turn any liberal out there that might be inclined to remember the old RFK Jr. from the 80s and 90s, the environmentalist, and vote for him. I think those people are all falling away. And we have seen that with Donald Trump's most recent attacks on RFK Jr., which he never did before a few weeks ago, but now he's attacking him almost every day.
Well, because he got wind of the fact that he was taking votes away from Trump. And so he felt the need to do something about it. Donald Trump is so easy to read, isn't he? I mean, there really is nothing to him, and anything that he says always kind of laced with that kind of inner monologue. Okay, talking of weird conspiracy theorists and crazy MAGA Republicans, let's talk about Kristi Noem and the very latest on what should we call it, Doggate or something? I don't know. I mean, this is just so weird. And it's initially it was like, because she shot her dog and then wrote about it in the book. That's the backstory. And then everyone was going, oh, well, she's now not a consideration for Trump's vice president. But now they're saying because she shot her dog and wrote about it in the book, she is a candidate for vice president. Let's have a little listen to her.
Now, what happens if you are debating Kamala Harris and she says, well, wait a second, you shot your dog and you wrote a book about it, bragging about it. How can you be vice president?
You know, that story was a choice as a mom. The safety of my children versus a dangerous dog that was killing livestock and attacking people. So this book that I've written is full of stories of my past, hard decisions, and I told the truth. And I think that's very different than a lot of politicians that we have today.
Do you regret telling that story? Do you feel like, oh, maybe I should have said it? Do you understand why people don't like that story?
No, everybody's known that story for years. That's what most people don't realize, is that in South Dakota, they've used that story to attack me and my political campaigns for years. I wanted people to know the truth. This dog was vicious. It was dangerous. It was killing livestock for the joy of it and attacking people. And I had a choice between keeping my family safe. I had little kids at the time, a very public business of inviting people out to come out and enjoy our hunting lodge and our business. And I don't pass my responsibilities off to anybody else. So that story is in the book because I want people to know that I'm honest and that when I have difficult jobs, that I take responsibility myself.
All right, so you're standing by the dog story.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's the facts.
Okay,
that's the facts. And I understand that they're attacking me for it, Jesse.
Yeah, they are.
So take it to the vet and have it euthanized, or call the city and have the dog people come down and deal with it humanely. I mean, what's going on with her?
Well, here's the thing. I mean, nobody is doing any of these interviews of Kristi Noem, not ABC, not CBS, not CNN, not Fox, not even Fox, based on her putting a book out, another autobiography, which she just put one out 2 years ago. She's only getting these interviews because of the dog story. And then it got even worse because she made up a story about staring down Kim Jong-un, you know, in a meeting with him when she never met him in her life.
Yeah.
But when she's asked point blank, she's talking about being honest. She's asked point blank, did you meet Kim Jong-un? Which everybody knows she didn't. She refuses to answer the question.
Well, she said, I've met a lot of world leaders and I've done a lot of traveling. Yeah. And then she mentioned under her breath the DMZ, the demilitarized zone, but she kind of let it go. It's just, yeah, I mean, it's just lies, right?
It's a disaster. And so really, she's not getting, so she's complaining that, well, you're not talking about the other things in my book. The bottom line is you're only getting these interviews because of the controversy. And that's also the point of putting controversial things in a book, is to get interviews and get people talking about it. So you can't complain about the fact that you're being asked about this stuff, because that's what happens in this deal. But I will say today, it looks like she's pulled the plug on this whole thing, is that she's canceled all of her upcoming interviews. Her excuse now is there's bad weather in South Dakota, that there's been a lot of storms. She put out a video this afternoon, I saw, where she was talking about all these really bad storms in the western hills of South Dakota, and there's been a lot of flooding, and she needs to stay home now to take care of the flooding in her state, which, of course, like, if none of this controversy was happening, she couldn't care less about that. But I think she's probably going to get off this book tour and pull the plug on the whole thing.
So, yeah, well, she has to stay home for dog funeral, I guess. Your prediction on the vice presidential candidate for Donald Trump is Elise Stefanik. You've said it many times, and we're having a little bet. I can't remember who I said I thought it was going to be, but I'm
going to say you said Kristi Noem, just because I want you to lose. But
you're a bad man. So she's been, Elise Stefanik's been holding one of these kind of Donald Trump fundraisers, and just explain, you know, about her route potentially to the White House.
So, you know, this is the event on Saturday, which was supposed to be his quote unquote apprentice style, you know, thing where he was going to have all the contenders for VP there. So in that photo, you can see like Byron Donalds, Elise, I'm going on Doug Burgum. Of course, Mike Johnson is just there, you know, as a Tim Scott, J.D. Vance. I'm going down the line here. Of course, Laura Trump, you know, the RNC person. So you got all these people up on stage. So it's not just the VP candidates. It's also like key influential Republicans that he invited up on stage for this photo. The controversy here is that there was another Republican in the audience who was not invited up on stage.
Uh-oh.
And who is not happy about the fact that she was not invited up on stage. And that is Marjorie Taylor Greene. And so I will say, I will not disclose the person who reached out to me from her camp. I'll just say that, who informed me that she wasn't especially happy about that, about being snubbed and in favor of all of those people. I mean, as loyal a person as Marjorie Taylor Greene, and you see all those people in that photo, and she has to stand out in the audience with everybody else and does not get to stand up there with Trump.
It must have been excruciating for her.
Yeah, you know it was.
It's interesting, isn't it, how Marjorie Taylor Greene's kind of brought about her own fall from grace in the Republican Party, you know, and being kicked out of the Freedom Caucus and now trying to get, you know, Mike Johnson off out of the Speaker's chair. And she really is just the wrong person for this job. I do wish so many of these characters, they would, I think I said this a couple of weeks ago, they'd be so much better just like being in reality TV and you know, filming her gym or her, you know, Lauren Boebert's restaurant and just like, you know, being TV stars. I don't think that public services, they're not really cut out for it at all. Terrible waste of our time.
The strategic miscalculation of her, where she got a lot of her colleagues against her, was it goes back to her backing McCarthy, you know, going against her own Freedom Caucus group. Yes. That got her kicked out of the Freedom Caucus, ruffled a lot of feathers among her friends. And then she went all in on McCarthy. And now the reason why she's so hostile to Johnson, a big reason, is because of he replaced her friend McCarthy. So it all goes back to that. And she overplayed her hand, and she overplayed her hand here with this motion to vacate. And she looks pretty bad and really, really has no friends anymore, I think, in Congress at all. She's just a lone wolf at this point.
We have to take another quick break. I want to come back and talk about Tucker Carlson's latest conspiracy and more from Mike Lindell. That's next here on Uncovered. Nobody likes using a cheap razor. That's why you've got to meet Henson Shaving. They're a family-owned aerospace parts manufacturer that has made parts for the ISS and Mars rover, and now they're bringing precision engineering to your shaving experience. If you're like 88% of men who experience irritation from shaving, you might be expecting the worst from each shave, yet Henson users have seen dramatic improvements. Henson Shaving's innovation comes from an interesting analogy. Think of razor blades as diving boards. The longer the board, the more it wobbles. The micro wobbles are what lead to more nicks and cuts. Henson solves this by minimizing blade extension, addressing the root cause of bad shaves. And it gets better. The razor has built-in channels to evacuate hair and cream, which makes clogging virtually impossible. The Henson razor works with standard dual-edge blades to give you that old-school shave with the benefits of new-school tech. Once you own a Henson razor, it's only about $3 to $5 a year to replace the blades. It's time to say no to subscriptions and yes to a razor that'll last you a lifetime. Visit hensonshaving.com/uncovered to pick the razor for you. And use code UNCOVERED and you'll get 2 years' worth of blades free with your razor. Just make sure to add them to your cart. That's 100 free blades when you head to hensonshaving.com/uncovered and use code UNCOVERED. And once again, the link is in the description below. Ron, before we get to Mike Lindell and more of these crazy conspiracies, just talk to me about this situation. Oh, it wasn't a situation, it was this scene that we saw, I think it was earlier today, with the congressperson. Was it Joe Neguse? Is that his name?
Oh, he's a Democrat. Yeah. This is appliance week. So another thing they just pulled the plug on. So, you know, they were supposed to have appliance week last week. Appliance week means, like, you know, there's this conspiracy stuff that's been going on a long time that the Biden administration is going to confiscate your gas stoves and your refrigerators and all your household appliances, because it all stems back to one bureaucrat, you know, fairly mid-level bureaucrat in the administration who wrote something about gas stoves in a policy paper.
They're coming for your stoves.
And that turned into a big thing. And, you know, all they want is more efficient appliances in the future. And they have some mandates for that that are like, well, some of them are just goals. Some of them are mandates, but they're way off into the future. No, nothing is being confiscated. No one's going to come to your home and take your appliances. But of course, you know, Republicans wanted to do an entire week on this because this is stuff that plays lovely on Fox News and Newsmax. You know, you talk about taking your refrigerator. That's just throwing red meat out to the MAGA base. They eat that stuff up because it's mindless drivel. And so so they had all that planned, but then that got rescheduled to this week. So this is supposed to be the big appliance week. And they had like two hearings on it. And then Mike Johnson, he just pulled the plug on that today and said, no, we're not doing these anymore. So the clip that you have is the first hearing that they had on appliances where Joe just ripped them to shreds and just showed how ridiculous this whole thing is. That on the one hand, Republicans say they believe in states' rights and leaving things to the local government, and the federal government is too big and has too many regulations. And on the other hand, they're trying to pass all these laws regulating appliances now, which is pretty inconsistent with their whole philosophy. But you know, they know none of this stuff is really going to pass or ever become law. This is all just theater.
Government. You said there's too much government in selecting one's toaster, I guess, or one's refrigerator, apparently, or one's washer and dryer. You went through this litany of examples. Where do you draw the line?
Where do I draw a line on what?
Yeah, how do you see, you know, you take issue with the federal government's role in this case with respect to the bill that you all have proposed. Where do you draw the line as to how much government is too much government?
Well, there's 17 enumerated powers in the United States Constitution, and I think government has well exceeded that. I think a return to a smaller, limited federal government is better.
Okay.
That's how our founders envisioned this.
That's helpful. That's what I was hoping you would say. You believe there's too much government in appliances or the selection thereof. You think there's too much government in baseball?
I don't think government has a role in baseball.
You don't think government has a role in baseball? That's fascinating. Are you familiar with the Competition and Professional Baseball Act?
Well, there's some antitrust laws.
No, I didn't ask you that. I asked if you're familiar with that bill. I mean, I'd hope you'd be familiar with it because it's your bill.
I am. Yeah.
Right? Yeah. You authored the Competition and Professional Baseball Act. That bill does what? It amends the Clayton Act to ultimately eliminate one of the antitrust exemptions that exists for professional baseball. You're familiar with the Clayton Act, yes?
I am.
And the Clayton Act is designed to do what? Protect consumers. Is that right? Is the Clayton Act part of the 17 enumerated powers of the federal government under the Constitution as you see it, that you hold so true and fast to?
Probably.
Probably? Okay, so looks like we found an exception. Maybe we can go down the list of some others. You see my point, Mr. Duncan.
I said it's too much government.
Oh yeah, I understand, but apparently too much government in the case of the bill that you've proposed, but not too much government in the case of professional baseball, where apparently you've introduced.
It's so, I mean, I could watch that for the rest of the day, but it's so interesting, isn't it? Because it's the contradiction, it's the hypocrisy that is the thing that catches out the Republicans all the time. And in fact, didn't they just oppose this, you know, Joe Biden announced this thing that if your flight gets canceled, you're entitled to a full refund. And then they just oppose that as well. I mean, I don't know. I can't even explain that. Like, why would they be against that? It's because they just want the airlines to keep all the profits.
If you claim to believe in these hard and fast set of principles, and then you have a guy, a very sharp guy like Joe Neguse, who can basically just go, okay, well, let's put that to the test. You know, you say you want smaller government and that the federal government should only be allowed to do 17 different things, categories of things, and yet you're trying to regulate professional baseball. That's not in the Constitution. Baseball didn't even exist when the Constitution was invented. So what are we talking about here? It's just exposing them for the hypocrisy, for that what they say they believe in, the principles, the foundations they believe in, are unmoored. And I can tell you, it wasn't always like this.
Yeah.
There were principled conservatives. There were principled Republicans who believed in these things and stuck to these things. But the current iteration of the Republican Party, Donald Trump's Republican Party, doesn't believe in any principles. They believe in power.
And you just imagine what the U.S. would be like if there were no regulations. I mean, it would be the Wild West. And this is what worries me, is that, you know, people haven't really got their heads around the alternative. That's a bit like Joe Biden's line.
Think if we didn't regulate appliances.
Yes.
You'd have toasters blowing up in people's houses.
Fires and death.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Destruction. It'd be a disaster.
Yeah. I mean, this is the thing that I think people fail to see. Because what was I thinking about this morning? Oh, that's right. I was thinking that, is there a law that says that it's illegal? This is just a bit of an aside, Ron. Hopefully you'll humor me. Is there a law on statute that says that it's illegal to commit a mass shooting or to shoot up a school?
Of course. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Right. Specific laws that say that preempt it, that say, okay, you can't do that, and this is the punishment if you do.
Yeah.
But it's never really spoken about. It's never really kind of, you know, it seems to me that the regulation that is important doesn't seem to get enough airtime. And the other thing I would say about the, you know, appliances is that the US laws on these things are way behind Europe and the rest of the world. You know, much of Europe is going to be banning gas cars by 2030. I mean, you can't imagine that happening here.
Look at the cars of the 1970s. I mean, the mufflers and the emissions and the no catalytic converters and all this stuff. I mean, of course, do we want to go back to that? Do we want to go back to these huge, loud, gas-guzzling boats, you know, that were on wheels? No, we don't want to do that. And so, yes, there has to be safety regulations, seatbelts. Cars back then, a lot of them didn't have seatbelts. You know, those are all government regulations.
But part of me thinks that there are Republicans who are like, yeah, hell yeah, let's smoke inside, let's smoke on planes, let's not wear seatbelts. Like, that is the world that they want. And there isn't really a consideration for the effects of that, which is, you know, death and destruction.
But they're not consistent on it. You know, they say that that's what they want. But then when you test them on it, like Joe did there, you know, you're saying that, but now you want to regulate this over here. You know, that's where you catch them every time.
Here's a perfect example of that. Tucker Carlson with Joe Rogan. Just explain his thoughts here before I show the clip.
This really shows, you know, that Tucker Carlson has gone completely off the deep end and has lost his mind. And I'm fully aware that everybody hates when I post anything from Tucker Carlson on social media.
Yeah, because I get the same with Sean Hannity.
They hate Tucker Carlson. Okay, I get it. But what I'm trying to do here is I'm trying to show how he has it completely unraveled and is circling the drain since he was fired by Fox. Tucker was nutty and crazy and right wing before he was fired pretty bad. But I think him being on Fox held him at least a little bit in check. And there were things that he didn't do that maybe he wanted to do. But now that he's been fired and knows he'll never work in television again, he's been fired by three different networks and he's free to do whatever he wants. And so what do you have to do? Well, when you're out there doing like a YouTube show or a show on Twitter, he doesn't do YouTube because he can't, but he'd be banned on YouTube. But he has his Twitter show. You got to be provocative to get people's attention. That's what you have to do. So he's continuing to go further and further and further into the crazy. And it's discrediting everything, all of his fans, the people who loved him, who thought he's the guru and a genius. It started really with his trip to Russia, you know, which was humiliating to I think even a lot of his fans were like, what the hell are you doing? And so a clip like this, where what he is doing is he was saying on Joe Rogan's show that Alex Jones, the crazy, insane conspiracy theorist, Alex Jones has supernatural powers and he's channeling the supernatural. And he used the example of 9/11 where he claimed that Alex Jones predicted 9/11 would happen, and therefore he's a prophet who is channeling supernatural powers and is able to see the future. Now, I posted this because I believe that even Tucker Carlson fans, a lot of them, are going to listen to this clip and go, our boys lost it, you know, and that's why I posted it.
Here he is.
How'd that happen?
Right, how did he do that?
No, he's channeling something.
You think
that's
so?
Super, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
There's like no other, I mean, tell me how he did it otherwise. I've asked him about it. How did you do that? At length, he had dinner in my barn recently. We're talking about this. How'd you do that? I don't know. It just came to me. And that's real. That is real. The supernatural is real. And I don't know why it's so hard for the modern mind, I guess because it's a materialist mind, to accept that. But what you see, and that's not a new phenomenon. It's happened throughout history. There are people called prophets. And there are people who were prophets who weren't called prophets, but there are people who have information or parts of information, bits of information, visions of information come to them, and then they relate.
He's just batshit crazy. And the saddest part of the story is, you know, as with a lot of these people, once they lose their position on a network, is that it exposes who they were all along. Right. And we just had that with the British Prime Minister who lasted like 2 weeks. She went now to a CPAC conference and is speaking, you know, on far right topics, like a far right, like way over there, not just the conservative that she claimed to be. And everybody was like, why is she doing this now? And I'm like, she was always like this because she was in Downing Street. She was tempering her extremism. But the reality is this is who these people are.
Yeah, the guardrails are off, and
yeah,
and then the everything comes out about well who they really are, and so yeah, I think there is a saturation point. I mean, I don't want to put too much of that kind of stuff out, but I do think it's important because it discredits him, and he's a big part of the MAGA movement, and you know, it discredits the movement as well. And keep in mind, I believe that he's going to run for president someday as well. You know, so that's also part of what I'm doing here too, is not people want, you know, let's ignore Tucker now. No. This guy's going to run for president someday. I'm not ignoring Tucker Carlson.
We only have a couple of minutes left. So let's get the latest on Mike Lindell. Last time we spoke, he was about to announce a big thing. Every week there's another big announcement coming, and it's something to look forward to. What's he offering this time?
Well, 3 years of court cases has finally come to an end. You know, all of his challenges, lawsuits all over the place. He's lost at every level. He's lost in every court, been sanctioned, been sued. So he's really at the end of the line when the Supreme Court 2 weeks ago refused to hear his appeal. Now he's being investigated criminally in two other states because of the exhibits that he attached to his petition.
Yeah,
has gotten him in trouble because they may have showed that he committed more crimes. But setting that aside for a second, so now what is Mike Lindell going to do? Because he should go back to trying to rebuild his pillow empire, but he clearly is not, because he loves the attention. He loves the adulation. He loves going to rallies and everybody cheering his name. And Mike Lindell, you know, he's an addict. And that's his new drug. Yes. You know, his new drug is this attention. So his new thing now is even more preposterous maybe than the other stuff, which is now he's going to spend all his time, according to him, 100% of his time talking to Democrats. And he is going to convince Democrats to vote for Trump. So all his focus now is going to be talking to Democrats. So I'm not quite sure that this is going to work well. I'm not sure he's necessarily the right spokesperson for this endeavor, but this is his new plan.
Okay. Well, he's carefully called it the Flipping Democrats Project. Let's hear the pitch. Here he is.
I'm not relaxing, everybody. I've got I've been working on a new plan that we're going to do in all 3,143 counties. It's my new Flipping Democrats Project. As long as we're approaching all the counties anyway, you can get out in front of this, everybody, and check it out at lindellplan.com. Steve, you have so many groups going after our base and the independents. We're going right into the heart of the Democrats, and we're getting them over to the compensation.
Hang on. What do you mean? What do you mean flipping Democrats? How are you going to flip? How are you flipping Democrats?
We're going to educate them. We're going to say, hey, because their eyes are open now. They're open to hearing all the problems we have. They can see it right in front of them. And we've been doing this on a small level. I just spent a lot of time, in Chicago about a month ago. And it was overwhelming. Everybody was flipping to this common sense bucket of Donald Trump. So we're going to take what we learned from them.
He's flipping crazy. When are we? I mean, it's so hard, isn't it? Because it's such an example, again, of this performative aspect of MAGA Republicans. We mentioned Marjorie Taylor Greene again, loves the attention. Boebert loves the attention. Matt Gaetz loves the attention. He loves the attention. But the actual kind of important stuff, you know, this country really needs good people doing good things. And this is all such a waste of time.
It's not going to come from people like Mike Lindell. You know, the funny thing is he's on Bannon's show every day because he's Bannon's number one sponsor. And so so Bannon has him on. But my favorite part of these Mike Lindell segments, I watch all of them. I can't get enough of Lindell. I'm crazy like that. Is watching Bannon's face. And if you watch Bannon's face, even in that clip, he always is like trying so hard not to laugh. Like you can see Bannon's not stupid. I mean, Bannon's very cagey and smart, and he knows like Lindell's batshit crazy. So he's just sitting there like, just kind of like, wait a minute, how are you going to do this? You know, but he's got this like wry little smile. You could see like he's holding, suppressing laughter. He just wants to burst out laughing at this guy, but he can't, you know? And so he's got to play this charade where he has to treat Mike Lindell as someone who's not a mental patient. But like I've said this before, the second he is completely broke and is not able to write any checks anymore, and I know there's been some reports that he is, but he's not quite there yet. That's when people like Bannon will act like, you know, they don't even know who he is.
We have to finish in just a second. One thing I forgot to mention earlier, but we've talked about, is what happened on the campaign trail today. We had Biden over here and we had Donald Trump over there. Just give us the lowdown on how these two people are attempting to win the presidency.
Well, we've heard from Donald Trump that the trial is election interference, right? Because he's not able to campaign because he's always stuck in court. But this is why I continue to document time and time again. Okay, what are you doing on the off days? Well, last Saturday, what did he do? He did that little apprentice thing at Mar-a-Lago with the VP candidates. Nothing in a swing state or anything like that. On Sunday, what did he do? He went to the Formula One race in Miami. Okay, again, that's not going to help him win any votes in Wisconsin. And so what is he doing today? Today's an off day in the trial. What is he doing? He is hosting an event at Mar-a-Lago for the people who bought his superhero NFTs, the people who are dumb enough to spend thousands of dollars buying this worthless junk that he sells. He's hosting an event for them. I mean, think about the crackpots and the QAnon weirdos that are going to show up at this, who are actually willing to pay all this money, fly for this event to Mar-a-Lago. Who are these people? These people are nuts. So he's hosting them at Mar-a-Lago during his off day. Meanwhile, what is Joe Biden doing? Joe Biden is in Wisconsin. Joe Biden is in Wisconsin because they are breaking dirt on a project where they're creating thousands of new jobs in this new Microsoft plant and coming through with a project, which was part of the infrastructure bill, that Trump promised them in that area, in that region, when he was president, with much fanfare. And he even showed up, Trump even showed up there with a golden shovel.
That's right.
And broke dirt.
Yep.
And nothing happened. And so Biden is there rubbing his nose in that and unveiling what he actually is delivering for the people of Wisconsin. So while all the Wisconsin media is going to be covering local politicians and Microsoft executives praising Biden for creating jobs in Wisconsin, Trump is hosting NFT card weirdos down at Mar-a-Lago.
And in fact, we've just put out a meme on Instagram and elsewhere, a Midas Touch meme, showing Joe Biden making this announcement and also rubbishing Donald Trump. And the way that Biden does it, I just wanted to say, because people write to me and they say, why don't you say enough good stuff about Joe Biden? And I totally agree. And maybe we need to do a little bit more of that. But some of the stuff that Biden's been doing, the way he's so sharp, the way he's uses comic timing and humor and doesn't take himself too seriously, I'm increasingly impressed with him, both as a president and as a presidential candidate. Finally, we should just say that Trump, when he was at the F1, he posted that it was thanks to him that the winning team won. He posted a photograph of him with the team and said it was a great honor to see my friends at McLaren win the Miami Formula One race. It was the car I visited before the race and endorsed. That's what we need for our country winning. Well, I have no words for this, really. I mean, what did he do? Bless the vehicle or something, you know, because he's the chosen one. Who only knows? Do you have any final thoughts on that, Ron? I feel like you do.
I mean, the McLaren people made a big mistake here. Yeah. They're learning the lesson the hard way that a lot of other people have learned with Trump, in that, you know, he asked to go into their garage and walk around and they agreed, but they don't want to be political. They want to stay out of politics. And they issued a statement where they emphasize this is not political. The problem is, that might be your position and that might be your policy, but he is going to use you in some way.
Yes.
And of course that happened. This young driver, Lando, he's very popular, won this big race, was an upset. He beat Max Verstappen, who, you know, has been almost invincible the last couple of years, since Leonard Hamilton has kind of declined. And this guy beats him in Miami and it's his big moment. And who is around is this orange menace, you know, has to get in on all the photo ops and take credit for it and say, because I visited their garage, that's why he won. And, you know, I sort of scolded them because I'm a Formula One fan. And I said, you know, you guys never should have let yourselves be put in this position to be used by this guy. And look how he repays you. He's taking credit for your win. So hopefully they and others learn their lesson that when you get into bed with Donald Trump, it's all about Donald Trump.
Well, Stormy Daniels wouldn't disagree with that. And yeah. I should just finally post this tweet that she put up that says, this is actually from 2022, isn't it? She posted, I don't owe him shit, and I'll never give that orange turd a dime. So I think that's a very good place to end. Ron, thanks very much for everything. As usual, your brain is encyclopedic. I'm going to go away and do some studying in time for next week. And if you want to download the audio podcast, you can catch that later tonight. It drops wherever you get yours. If you want to watch this show again, you can rewind when we finish. Don't forget to share and comment and like, and check out our sponsors there in the description below as well. Ron, all the very best to you. Have a great week. Catch you next Wednesday.
You got it.